I'm Asma Al-Kassimi, and I'm from the Department of Physics at U of T. Today I'll be talking to you about several ways to quantify quantum correlations, and on the way I'll show you how some of these quantifications can be used to study the evolution of these correlations in actual physical systems. A correlation is a relationship between different random quantities. And quantum correlations are those correlations that we do not experience in our everyday life, but that require quantum mechanics to describe them. Why are we interested in them? Well, first of all, it's to satisfy our own curiosity to understand the laws that govern the world of small particles. Another thing is, if we understand them well, then we can use them in applications such as in building technologies. Out there, there's a zoo of different ways to quantify them, but today I'll be talking to you about five different approaches. The first one is an information-based approach in which the amount of information that we need to create the state of interest is related to the correlation, and then I'll show you how by using a local operation one can detect whether there's correlations or not. Third, I'll talk about a measurement-based approach. Fourth, I'll show you this distance measure in which distances between states of interest are used to quantify them. And finally, I'll show you this new geometric representation of quantum systems which can help us find a way to quantify them. On the way, I'll also show you how by using certain quantities, like some of the ones I mentioned up here, how useful they can be to study how entanglement evolves in real physical systems. The first two examples will involve studying the phenomena of entanglement sudden death, one for two-qubit system, the other for two-harmonic oscillator systems. And the third one will be looking at correlations in an atomic spectroscopy experiment. Okay, so we'll start with two objects. We don't have to know what they are at this stage, except that they're quantum. You allow them to interact, and then you give one of these quantum objects to Alice and the other to Bob, and you place a wall in the middle. You do so that you prevent them from talking to each other or interacting anymore. Now, let's say that Bob, who has the blue object, makes a measurement on the blue object. Then what will happen is not only will this red object actually know that Bob performed a measurement, and I'm using "know" loosely, but it will also change its state based on Bob's outcome. And that's what Einstein famously called spooky action at a distance. He was specifically referring to quantum entanglement. Now, an important point to make at this point is that no matter what basis you choose to do the measurement, this kind of correlation will persist. And that's a key difference between classical correlations and quantum correlations. So let me tell you more about the main model that I'll be using for these quantum objects in this talk. You have two-level quantum systems. Another word for that is qubit, where you can have, the system can be in state 0 or 1. An example of such a system is a two-level atom, where one state represents the ground state and the other the excited state. Now, this system is not only capable to be in state 0 or 1, but it can be in a linear combination. So you have this general ket representation. And if you take the outer product of this ket, you end up with a matrix, which gives you the density matrix representation. Now, if you know everything about your state, so you can actually write a ket for it, then you have a pure state. But not always is that the case. Sometimes you don't know everything, and your state doesn't have a ket representation. That's called a mixed state. But you can still, in this case, have a density matrix representation. But now, what the density matrix means is not exactly the same as in the pure state case. Now it's more like the ensemble average of the pure state case. If we want to talk about quantum correlations, we need more than one quantum object. So at least two. So if you have these two qubits in a pure state, then this is the general way to describe them. And if they're mixed, then the general way is by this 4x4 density matrix. So let's say that our two qubits, we'll label them A and B. Together, they make system C. And let's assume that C, the state of C is actually pure, which means you can write a ket for it. Now, if you cannot decompose this ket into a state of system A across a state of system B, then you know there's something quantum-y in the system, and you know that quantum entanglement exists. The level or the strength of quantum entanglement can differ. It can be partially entangled or it can be maximally entangled. An example of a maximally entangled state is this Bell state over here. And what do we mean by maximally entangled? Well, if you have two objects that are maximally entangled and like you can't describe one while forgetting about the other. The description of both of them are very dependent on each other, so that if you decide to forget about one object, you're introducing the maximum possible noise into the system. So since Bell states are maximally entangled, they're up there, why don't we use them as a reference to compare to entanglement of other states? So let's go back to Alice and Bob and their qubits and ask the question again, how much entanglement is between these two qubits? One way to answer this question is to say, why not make several realizations of this pair and then ask if we allow Alice and Bob to perform local operations on their respective qubits and also to communicate classically, how many Bell states can we create? How many Bell states can we extract out of all these realizations? And this is another way to ask the question, is how much information is required to create the state that we're interested in? And the answer involves units of e-bits, which basically tells you how many Bell states you can extract out of all these realizations. Now, based on this idea, it ends up being very simple for pure states. In fact, the entanglement, also known as the entanglement of formation, is just the von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix of rho. And it doesn't matter which reduced density matrix you use, you get the same answer. So it's pretty straightforward for pure states. For mixed states, it's not as straightforward, but you can still extend the ideas and add a few steps. So here you have your mixed state rho written in a pure state decomposition. Now, we know how to calculate the entanglement of pure states. So you do that, you multiply it by the corresponding constant, and you almost have the entanglement of formation for mixed state, except that you do have to minimize over all pure state decompositions because they're not unique. And entanglement of formation is related directly, it's a monotonic function of concurrence, Wouter's concurrence. I will show you an example next, and I'll explain to you how to calculate concurrence and show you how useful it is. So this is the information-based approach now to quantify correlation. So let's look at an example. The example I'll look at will involve studying the phenomena of entanglement, sudden death. In real quantum systems, even if you start by being very highly entangled, because of environmental interaction, entanglement will decay. It can decay in two ways. It can either decay asymptotically, or it can just decay and then all of a sudden abruptly disappears, goes to zero. In the second case, we call that entanglement sudden death. So the system I'll be showing you first is a system of two qubits, each placed in a reservoir, and you don't allow the reservoirs to talk to each other. And the temperature of this reservoir is finite, it's not zero. And there's the depopulation going on. And the model we're using is the following. So we assume that the density matrix representing these qubits is given by this X-shaped matrix, so you call them X states. Why do we do that? Well, because this is the most general matrix you can get in which you can find an analytic solution. And also, not only that, we're not really sacrificing much because there are lots of states that people are so interested in, and they all fall under this class, like the Bell states, the maximally entangled mixed states, the Wernher states, and so on. Now, the dynamics of this system is given by this master equation, where the first term represents the unitary evolution, and the last, the decay, or the non-unitary evolution, is given by these two Liouvillians, or the two qubits. Each Liouvillian is given by an expression like this. N bar is the average occupation number of particles in the reservoir. Gamma is the decay rate. Sigma minus and sigma plus are the annihilation and creation operators acting on the qubits. Now, the first term for in this Liouvillian represents the depopulation that's due to stimulated and spontaneous emissions. And the second term is the re-excitations caused by finite temperature. So before I show you the results and how we solve this, let me show you how to calculate concurrence. So for a general density matrix row, what you need to do is find the eigenvalues of the R matrix, where R equals rho times lambda times complex conjugate of rho times lambda. Lambda is just the tensor products of the sigma y Pauli matrices. And what you do is you list all the eigenvalues from largest to smallest, square root them, subtract them from each other. Concurrence is either this expression or zero, whichever is maximum. And in fact, the way concurrence is defined allows it to have values between 0 and 1, where 0 corresponds to there being no entanglement at all in the system, and 1 to the case where you have maximum entanglement, and anything between is partially entangled. So let's see how concurrence for an x state looks like. This is the expression. It's the maximum, twice the maximum of 0, that expression over here, or that. So to solve for the condition that there is no entanglement for this system, what we did was we solved the master equation to find rho of t, and then we solved for the condition that concurrence is zero. And that ended up being equivalent to solving two quartic equations in the parameter x, where x equals e to the minus 2n bar plus 1 times gamma t. Now notice that this means that when t is 0, x equals 1, and when t is infinity, x equals 0. And this x equals 0 case corresponds to the asymptotic decay of entanglement. So what we did is we showed that there is no x equals 0 solution. And we also showed that there is at least one root between this physical range of x being between 0 and 1. And in doing so, we proved that for x states undergoing depopulation in a finite temperature heat bath, you always get entanglement sudden death. Entanglement always decays in a finite time. I want to show you an example to demonstrate this result. So this example involves this class of density matrices. This is a special case of an x state. It's a matrix parameterized by alpha. Yu and Eberle showed for this, the case where temperature of the reservoir was 0, that there are certain values for alpha where you get entanglement sudden death and others which you don't. Specifically, you don't get entanglement sudden death when alpha is between 0 and 1/3. So here you have some plots. You have concurrence versus alpha versus this x parameter. Now, n bar is related to temperature. So when n bar is 0, temperature is 0. Now notice in that case, you get this x equals 0 solution for alpha being between 0 and 1/3, and that confirms Yu and Eberle's result. But as soon as you start to get finite, n becomes finite, which means temperature becomes finite, even if it's tiny, this x equals 0 solution disappears completely. And as you increase temperature, everything seems to decay at, like the entanglement just gets lost for time corresponding to the to x equals 0.5. So this shows you how useful this measure can be. Next, I want to show you another way to, well, it's not to quantify correlations. It's more like to know if they're there or not. And that's using the the Paris partial transpose criterion for separability. Now let me remind you that one of the properties of a density matrix that's important for it to be physical is that the eigenvalues of the density matrix rho has to be greater than zero. So the idea is you take your density matrix of the whole system, and then you transpose over one subsystem only. So you're doing something local, and seeing if that messes up the property of the whole system, you expect that if you have entanglement, it will. So what you do is then you calculate the eigenvalues for sigma, the partially transposed rho, and if sigma has at least one negative eigenvalue, then you know for sure that there's entanglement in the system. But if it doesn't, you don't know. It could be entangled or it could be separable, which means not entangled. Now, although this is a weakness in the criteria or criterion, this does not prevent us from using this and making it useful in some studies. So I want to show you an example next, which also involves studying entanglement sudden death. Now, the weakness of this criteria means the following. This is the consequence of it to the study of ESD, is that the study of entanglement sudden death, the non-existence of this phenomenon can be proven with certainty, but not its existence. And the example I'll show you now is not for two qubits. It's for two harmonic oscillators. So, and the dynamics is dephasing. So for the n photon two mode states undergoing dephasing, you have this density matrix. Just the off diagonal elements get this decay term. So let's partially transpose that, and then you end up with this. And you can show, if you play with it, that this psi, the state here, is actually an eigenvector of the partially transposed rho with this eigenvalue. Notice that this eigenvalue is always negative unless time is infinite, which tells us that as long as you have some coherence in the system for a general two-mode n-photon state that's undergoing dephasing, you don't get entanglement sudden death. So entanglement is long-lived. However, in the same paper here, which we published this result, we also show that whatever is left of this entanglement is too small. It's not even of practical use. So I showed you now two different examples, one with two qubits, one with two harmonic oscillators, and they're both, the lesson you can get out of it, one of the lessons, is that entanglement is very fragile. So it's very, like, the hope is a bit low on how we can build technologies, quantum technologies. So maybe the next question to ask is entanglement all that's out there? Is there something besides entanglement that's maybe more robust so it can be better to use in applications? This brings me to the subject of quantum discord. Now, this is a quantity that Olivier and Zirek discovered by, it's a different way to quantify correlations, and it's based on the idea that in quantum mechanics, measurements disturb quantum systems. So the idea is you perform a measurement and then you see if there's a disturbance. How do you see if there's a disturbance? You look at the mutual information function. This is one way you can do it. And the mutual information function basically tells you how much information is shared between these two qubits, and it represents how, and it equals the entropy, the von Neumann entropy of one qubit plus the von Neumann entropy of the second one minus the entropy of the whole system. So the idea is you perform a measurement on system B, and then you look at I of rho before and after the measurement, and you compare the two expressions. So I of rho before is just I of rho. After, it's C of rho. And discord is defined to be Q equals I minus C. Now, if there are quantum correlations in the system and you perform the measurement, then you will cause a disturbance, and C will not be the same as I. So you will get the non-zero value for discord, but if there's no disturbance, they're the same, and discord is zero. One point, though, is that because the measurements you can perform on B are not unique, you do have to maximize over all measurements before you get the final expression for C of rho. Yep, you're taking the worst case scenario. So now I showed you that information-based approach, for example, with the concurrence entanglement formation, it's a different approach to quantify correlation than this one is based on measurements. You might be wondering, what's the relationship between these two quantities, since you're doing different things to get them? Well, here we have a plot for the most general two-qubit system. You have discord versus entanglement of formation. Few points to note. First of all, notice that on the discord axis, you have some points, which tells you that even if there's no entanglement in the system, you can still have discord. But except for the origin, you don't really have any points on the entanglement axis, which tells you entanglement cannot exist if there's no discord. Another thing is you see this black line over here, that represents pure states, it has slope 1. It shows you that for the pure state case, entanglement and discord are just the same, they're identical. Also, you have some states here that bound the relationship. From below, you have the relationship bound that by the, like the beta states. From above, it's partly by the alpha states given there, and then by the Werner states, and then by the pure states. Werner states are just the linear combination of a maximally entangled state and a maximally mixed state. Yep. What I said is if there's no discord in the system, you can't have entanglement either.
Because
you see there's here, the entanglement, the points here represent zero discord, but we don't have any points, so no entanglement. Okay. It's not for a specific system. It's for the most general two-qubit system, just any qubit, like all possible density matrices for two qubits. So it's a numeric result. Yeah. So, no, the significance is that from this region here, sort of till here, that's the upper bound. Like the upper bound is not defined by one class of state. It seems depending on the region. So partly by the alpha states there, and then partly Werner states, and then the pure states. Yeah. Okay, so from this plot, you can sort of see, especially that I mentioned those points that have no entanglement and discord, that discord might be more robust than entanglement. So the question is, how is discord related to the noise in the system? So here we have a plot for discord versus linear entropy. And I want to mention that I did not include all the points, only the states that are involved in defining the boundary somehow. In fact, if you actually include all the density matrices, this whole area gets filled up, even here. So there's no lower bound on this relationship. And the upper bound is given from up to, from that corner to this pimple point by the two parameter states, and then from here to the maximally mixed states by the Werner states. Now, of the whole like density matrix of the whole system. It's just you redefine trace of rho squared so that you can only end up between 0 and 1. It's related directly to trace of rho over squared, but you just add a constant and multiply the whole thing by another constant so that the maximum value is 1 and the minimum is 0. Oh, the green, okay, so this set of these two parameter states, it's not a line, it's represented by all that area, yeah. Sorry? Yes, it does, and that's why the green one is what really we think of as the upper bound. Yeah. Yes. We could have used von Neumann, but this is simpler to calculate. Yeah, I mean, linear entropy will still tell you about the how pure, how much noise you have. So it's not that bad to use it. Yes. The message is how much discord can you have for a certain amount of a system with a certain amount of noise. That's the message you want. Yes, for example, you can also observe things like the following. I mean, like I told you, this whole thing is filled up. You can be as close as you like to the maximally mixed state, and you can still have non-zero discord. And your system can be pretty noisy. But in the case of entanglement, as soon as you cross this linear entropy being 8 over 9, you can't have entanglement anymore. Like, it abruptly go to zero. So this is one message. Another message is, you have this pimple area. This represents an area where it looks like when you're increasing the noise of the states, you're increasing discord. It looks like discord is enhancing, sorry, noise is enhancing discord. So for experimentalists, it might be a good set of states to work with when they have to deal with noise in the system. Okay, so I discussed now the relationship between entanglement, discord, linear entropy, maybe it gave us some feel for the relationship between them, but we don't necessarily understand 100% what these correlations are. So a better approach could be, or the next approach could be, I want to show you an example now, is to go to an actual experiment in the lab where there's quantum advantage, and try to relate the quantum advantage to these quantities so that you can get a feel for them. Sorry? I did not put all the points because I wanted you to see the area for the two parameter states. This green area represents this class of density matrices. It's not a line, it's an area. But you are right, we should have, like, if you include all the density matrices, you should have this filled, you should have all this filled as well. So let's go to this accessible quantum experiment, which has an advantage. First, let me show you, this is a spectroscopy using atoms, okay? Now, people sometimes use one qubit to do that. So the idea is that you have your qubit. Let's say you start in ket 0 or ket 1. You apply a pi over 2 pulse over that, on that, and you create a superposition. And then when you allow that superposition state to evolve, you get this phase here, this local phase. And the ability to measure this phase, how well you do it, is how you can define how great your spectroscopy experiment is working. And then the idea is you perform another pi over 2 pulse and measure the population of the atoms in certain states, and from that you can find phi. Now this is using a single atom. The paper over here, they showed that if you use two atoms, or two, they're using ions, if you're using two atoms or two ions, even if they're not entangled, you can still do better than the single ion case. Because using those, they show that you have longer coherence time, so more signal. So the question was, they can give us, they're measuring something which tells them how great the experiment is working, and using that, we're trying to find out how's that related to the correlations. So let me tell you a little bit more about the system. So you have two ions in a trap, and the dynamics is dephasing. If your initial state is a pure state, this is the most general way to describe it. Now, this dynamics means that after some time, the density matrix of this state evolves into this form. This is almost like an X state, except it has the arm chopped off from here and here, so we call it memed X state. And this represents an experiment in Reiner Blatt's group in Innsbruck, and they talk about something called parity. Parity is basically tells how well they're measuring these populations, which give them the information about the phase. And for the memed X states, the parity ends up just being twice the real of Z. Z is just that off-diagonal element, so it's only related to Z. So the question is, how is it related? This is because this directly tells you about how well they're doing. This tells you there's an advantage. So how is this advantage related to correlations like entanglement or discord? Well, for entanglement, you have this expression for concurrence for the memed X states. For discord, it's been shown that for memed X states, you don't have an analytic expression for discord. But recently, we published this paper in which we find a very good approximation. It's an analytic expression, but it's a very good approximation for discord for this case. It's actually even for X states, not just memed X. So it's given by the entropy of the reduced density matrix for system B minus the entropy of the whole system plus the minimum of N1 or N2. N1 is just this function H of all that stuff. H of Y is the binary entropy function given by this expression. And N2 is here, this expression. The reason I put this for you on the slide is to show you that, look, parity is dependent on Z. Concurrence sometimes can depend on Z, sometimes not. Similarly with discord. So it's not like that clear. Oh, I can just look at this and say, okay, it's always discord or it's always entanglement. It's not as simple as that. But to help us understand what's going on, maybe it's best to look at some examples. So let me show you the first example, where you start with the two ions being in this particular Bell state, 0, 0, plus 1, 1. If you look at the evolution of the correlations, this is what you end up with. The parity is this magenta line, the first one here. And the classical correlations just stay the same throughout the experiment. They're not changing. It doesn't look like they're very related to parity. And discord is not exactly parity, but it's behaving in a similar manner. They both start the maximum possible value and then decay. You might be wondering, where is entanglement? Well, entanglement happens to be, in this case, identical to parity. It is not shown here because it's right underneath this magenta line. So it looks like when you have this state, entanglement is the directly responsible correlation. Now let's look at another example. Here you start with the ions being in this separable state. How do these correlations look like? Well, first of all, you start in an unentangled state, and entanglement just stays zero. It's not doing anything. This is parity. It starts from being maximum and just, again, decays to some constant value. It just sticks there. Discord actually starts by being zero, and as the system becomes more noisy, surprisingly, well, maybe not because of that pimple I showed you, it is increasing. Classical correlation has somehow similar behavior, but now the problem is neither entanglement nor discord are really, they don't look like they behave like parity that much. first plot I showed you, you could sort of say, yeah, it's entanglement. Here, it's not very clear what's going on. Where is the disadvantage, the parity coming from? Yeah.
Separately on the qubit, or is it collectively?
Collectively. Yeah. But in this. Yeah. But here, in the first example, parity, which is the advantage that we are measuring in the lab, it's not in our imagination, it was directly related to entanglement. Here, none of these correlations are coinciding with parity. So now we don't know what's going on. So these examples are show, yes, go on. Yeah, so this advantage that we're getting by using two correlated ions, and you know, if we want to talk about quantum correlations, you need two. So now you know there's something quantum-y. But, hard to compare what to what? Yeah. A white noise.
Oh, sorry. What is this? Is it division or white noise?
Well, you have they're both in separate environments, and the correlation function is given by a delta function. Oh, it's a function that it's very narrow like that. It's infinite. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean here if you increase classical correlation
Yes, we are increasing classical correlations because you start at zero and you're improving. Yeah. But the question is here, it's fine if we discover that the advantage is coming from classical. But here it looks like a, like it's not even directly related to this. You see? We are not sure. Like if you look at this plot here, you should just think this is telling you about the advantage, how well you're doing everything. Which one of these three resemble that? Okay. Okay, so then I showed you now this example. Now we'll go to, I'll show you now, we finished up with examples. I want to show you a different way to quantify correlations. It's a nice geometric approach, which was started by, it was started by Vidral et al. And the idea behind this geometric approach is to measure distances between density matrices, and I'll explain to you what I mean by distance in a few slides. So let's look at this picture. You start here, this whole area represents the set of all density matrices, and within that area, you have the set of separable states, like I mentioned earlier. Separable just means not entangled. Now, the density matrix that we're interested in can be represented by a point somewhere there. And if we want to ask the question of how much entanglement is in the system, what we do is we find the closest separable state to rho, and we measure that distance, and that's entanglement. This is how you write it symbolically. The distance between rho and sigma is entanglement, where sigma belongs to S, and it's chosen so that it minimizes this distance. Now, let's take this separable set and zoom in. So you have the set of separable states, and within that, you have the set of classical states in yellow, and then you have the set of product states. I purposely have different shapes for these two groups to remind myself and you that this is, these two groups are not convex. What does that mean? It means if you take a mixture of a product state, one product state with another, with a mixture, with another product state, you don't necessarily end up with a product state. Or if you take a mixture of a classical state with another classical state, you don't necessarily end up with a classical state. So let's look at how, I'll show you now. So let's look at how density matrix in each of these systems look like. For the product states, you have this. It's given by density matrix in one system cross the other. This represents a state in which there is no correlation at all, neither classical nor quantum. Next, we have the classical states. They're given by this expression chi. Now, one thing to note is that now when you look at this, you know, ket k1 in one system in, for one qubit and then two qubit, the idea is that for the, each of the different terms, whatever corresponds to the first qubit is orthogonal to the other. Another way to think of classical states is that if you look at the eigenvectors, you find that they're separable. Okay, so let's look at separable states. Separable states are given in general by this decomposition, which is also known as the Werner decomposition. And here, the density matrix, this represents a density matrix in one qubit and the other. You have different terms. Now, the density matrix in one term, if you look at it and compare it to the other term, they don't have to be orthogonal to each other. So now that we know what each of these classes look like, what they mean, let's use that and go and define some correlations. So again, we have the density matrix rho. To define entanglement, you say that it's the shortest distance between a rho and a separable state, sigma prime. To define discord, you say it's the shortest distance between rho and a classical state, chi prime. Now, the next correlation I will mention is called dissonance. The people who came up with this idea in this paper, they think of it as the correlation that does not have entanglement. So if you think of discord as representing all correlations, the states that don't have entanglement will have dissonance. And so the way you calculate it using this approach is to find the distance between this sigma prime here and the closest and the classical state chi double prime. Now, I will show you in a minute a picture that will help you see all this. But now let's go to the question of how to use this to quantify or measure classical correlations. Well, you have two options in this case. You can either start from chi prime and then go to the closest product state pi prime, or you start from chi double prime and you go to the closest state pi double prime. So let's look at a picture that will help us see all this. So here you have the set again, the set of all density matrices, the set of separable states, the set of classical states, and the set of product states. And our density matrix is represented by this point over there. Now to measure entanglement, you look at distance between the point and the closest separable state. To measure discord, you look at the distance between that point and the closest classical state. To measure dissonance, you look at the distance between this separable state here and the closest classical state. And to measure classical correlations, you have two options. You can either start from here and go to the closest product state, or start from here and go to the closest product state. Okay, so I've been talking about distance in the last few slides. What do we mean by distance? Well, the function or quantity that you can use to measure distance is not unique. It's not one function. It's flexible, except that the function you choose has to satisfy certain conditions. First, this quantity that you choose has to be zero when you know that the correlation you're trying to measure is not present in the system. Second, this quantity has to be invariant under local unitary operations. Third, this quantity cannot increase under local general measurements combined with classical communications. What's one candidate for such a function? It's the von Neumann relative entropy. So you have S from rho to sigma equals trace of rho log rho over sigma. Now, this is a very, this idea which I just described is very nice and neat, but the problem is it's not easy. It's not easy to do it this way. And we were thinking, why not think of another geometric approach that experimentalists can relate to? And experimentalists in this field relate a lot to Bloch's view representation of qubits.
Those requests is just the distance, so it's a bit between two arbitrary states. It's not you are not speaking now of entanglement or separable states or classical states. It was only between two states. In particular, I have not understood your the third request, that is local measurements and classical communication.
You don't want to be able to do something locally and talk to. If you're Bob and Alice and you don't want to talk to her, and that way you're increasing your correlation. It's just.
But that's just the distance, eh? So.
No, this is the requirement that the function that you use for distance has to satisfy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So normally we ask that it doesn't increase under whatever operation. Eh? So it's even stronger than this. So that you don't want to. So why
you're saying that there should be more restrictions?
Well, normally, is, for example, relative entropy doesn't increase under quantum operations. So you don't distinguish between, there is no notion of locality, classical communication.
Yeah, you can think of other conditions. I just want to give you a flavor of the things that you should look for. I mean, this is, you're welcome to have other conditions as well.
But what I meant is, why third now is about, so I thought that these are requests on your distance quantifier, right? So it's not the distance applied in a context, in a specific context where, for example, we don't want entanglement to increase under local general measurements and classical communication, right? So,
yeah.
But that's entanglement. Here now is just the distance between two states. So why are you considering that perspective?
Because that distance is not really a distance, it is a measure for entanglement.
Yes.
We're calling it distance because it has that nice geometric description. Like, it is, in the end, a quantification for entanglement. It's not a distance like we understand it, you know.
Okay.
But distance in the sense that if you want to, you go through the space of density matrices and you find what's the density matrix that gives you the smallest value for this. So that's, and in a way you can think that's like a distance to that other density matrix.
Let me only ask this.
You can ask me later if you want.
These requests are about D, and then you use D in whatever way you want to quantify entanglement, classical correlations, the score, dissonance. But is the requests that you are making here, are they about D?
Well, yes, and in this case, the people in reality had entanglement in mind.
Okay.
But you can still extend these ideas. The ideas are simple. Like, for example, this is very, like, it makes sense. You know, you don't want the quantity for whatever correlation you're looking at to give you a non-zero number when you know there's no correlation. It's just common sense. Okay, so let's now look at this other approach I was telling you. This is the approach, it's another geometric approach, but it's using the Bloch's view representation of a qubit. Now, if your qubit is in a pure state, then it can be represented by a point somewhere on the sphere. So if it's over here, then you know you are in the zero state. If it's here, you know you're in the one state. If it's somewhere on the x or y axis, you're in some linear combination of the two. But you don't have to be on an axis. You can, for example, be here. Now, if you look at this line, the angle between this line and z axis is theta. The angle between the projection of the line on the xy plane with the x axis is phi. And the state is given in a linear combination as well. of 0 and 1 and define in terms of theta and phi that way. But in general, since states don't have to be pure, they're mixed. So how can we represent a mixed state in this Bloch sphere representation? Here is how you do it. A is the Bloch vector. Sigma I represents the Pauli matrices. Now you have A1, A2, A3. That's like the x, y, z component of the point. And AI is actually the average of the corresponding sigma I. So if you have two of these qubits, you give each one of them, this is how like you do it for the most general qubits. So for each of the two qubits in general, this is how you write it. And for each one, you give them one of these representations. And the question is, how can you use this Bloch sphere representation for the qubits to represent a density matrix that's like describing the whole system, A and B together? Well, before I show you that, let me introduce you to this tensor. It's an average over some operators in one qubit across the other. You notice they involve the Bloch vectors and the Pauli matrices. This is a tensor called the cross-correlation tensor, and it's going to be important in the next few slides, so we put a box around it. And after having this tensor defined, this is how you can write rho AB in general. It's the Bloch sphere representation of one qubit, so rho A, cross the other, rho B, plus a quantity that involves this tensor, Cij. Now notice that if Cij is 0, you end up with a product state. So there is no correlation at all, which tells us that the information about the correlations is carried by Cij. So what about Cij can we calculate in order to figure that out? We found out that if you look at the determinant of Cij, this tells you about the existence or absence of quantum correlations. So for example, when there is entanglement in the system, the determinant of Cij is less than 0. It's negative. But it's not true the other way around. So if the determinant of Cij is negative, that doesn't mean there's entanglement in the system. We also found out that when the determinant of Cij is less than 0, then discord is greater than 0. But it is not true the other way around. If discord is not 0, that does not mean the determinant of Cij is less than 0. So let me tell you about a definition. We call states that have negative determinant for Cij sinister states. I'll explain to you in a few slides why we do that, but for now, if you accept this and you look at the 2 points 1 and 2, what this tells us is that all entanglement is sinister and all sinister states are discordant. So next, let me show you what we have so far about the general relationship between the determinant of Cij and entanglement. This is how the relationship looks like. This is for 100,000 points. The upper bound is given by minus concurrence to the fourth. And that actually represents the set of pure states. So it's like a relation you can write down analytically. The rest is for more general states. From below, so far, the result we have is showing us that for the most part, it's related to minus concurrence squared. And this is the relationship between determinant of Cij versus discord. Okay, so let's go back to the question of why we call the negative determinant state sinister. To do that, we need to write Cij in the singular value decomposition. This is just a general decomposition. It's more general than the spectral decomposition. In fact, the latter is a special case of the former. So let me tell you a little bit about it. Those the constant sk, the numbers represented by sk, these are called singular values, and they're positive. And the vectors represented by a are orthonormal with each other. Similarly, the vectors represented by b are orthonormal with each other. Now, you see how we're labeling them by k. K goes between from 0, like 1, 2, 3. This ordering is not random. You have to choose a specific ordering. So for example, you can start by the term that's represented by the largest singular value, and then the second largest, and then the smallest. Now, the vector set A1, A2, A3, and the vector set B1, B2, B3 can be either right-handed or left-handed. What does that mean? If you cross A1 cross A2, you get A3, A2 cross A3, you get A1, A3 cross A1, you get A2, then you have a right-handed system, similarly for B. But if you go A1 cross A2 and you end up with minus A3, then you have a left-handed system. So what we found out is that if one of the vector sets is left-handed and the other right-handed, the determinant of Cij is always less than 0, and sinister is Latin for left. Now, this sinister term is actually not entirely our invention. Joe Altpeter, who's doing a work related to ours, he pointed out the sinister term. Okay, now that's actually almost the end. So today I showed you 5 different ways to quantify or detect quantum correlations. The first one was an information-based approach in which the amount of information required to create the state of interest tells you about how much entanglement you have. The second one was that partial transpose criterion where you do something local and see how that messes up the physical properties of the density matrix. And then I looked at at quantum discord where you use the fact that measurements disturb quantum systems. And fourth method was that geometric approach about measuring distances. So you had the way you capture the correlations is you measure distance between the density matrix you're interested in and the closest density matrix that lacks the property you're trying to measure. And I also introduced you to this new geometric way to quantify correlations by using the Bloch sphere representation of qubits in which the cross-correlation matrix comes out, and we use that to detect or measure correlations. I also showed you how some of these can be very useful to show us how quantum correlations involve in real physical systems. We studied like the first two examples were about entanglement, sudden death. One was for 2 qubits, the other for 2 harmonic oscillators. And finally, I showed you what kind of correlations exist for certain states in an atomic spectroscopy experiment. Thanks.
Questions? More questions, I could say, right?
No questions? Finish them all? Yeah.
So when you consider the decomposition, the state of 2 qubits, often people use a standard decomposition where there is also a matrix C that is not related to what you wrote, but not exactly.
Fano representation?
Sorry?
Is that the Fano representation where you have like tensor products have different Pauli matrices?
Yeah, so you consider the expansion in Pauli matrices and then, you have something very similar to this, but where you probably there is a slight redefinition of what C is. Sometimes, I don't know exactly, reintroduce the decomposition in the history of physics or quantum information. But I was wondering whether, and people all the time compute, I don't know, for example, you can verify whether, you know, your state violates Bell inequality just by checking properties of that part, that correlation matrix. So I was wondering whether you have, what is the relation of you're seeing with these new, well, maybe, I don't know, more used seed, and whether you could apply, you know, this kind of analysis that you did to that case. I don't know whether sinister, you would find sinister things.
No, I haven't compared them. You might be able to apply it, but what I find very cool and attractive about this is that the way you write it means that when this is zero, you have no correlations at all in the system. So you're basically, you know, everything is here. You're putting, but in the other decomposition that you're talking about, I'm not sure if that C that they're using when it's zero, that there's no correlation. Maybe you don't end up with a product state.
You can still have correlations.
Yeah, you can still have correlations, exactly. And I wanted a state in which you don't have correlations if that tensor is zero. This way I can just tell myself everything is here. I can just handle that.
I see that it's nice. I mean, to check immediately, but it's only about, you know, when you ascribe different parts of the correlations to different parts of your representation, different aspects may be highlighted or not. And I was just wondering whether you were aware of this connection and or specifically or what is the connection.
No, I have not made the comparison, no.
Yes.
Thank you.